Welcome to Super Talk, the podcast that scratches your superhero itch. Just two suburban dads nerding out over superhero stuff on the small screen and the big. Buckle up, people. Enjoy the ride.
Welcome to Super Talk, the weekly podcast dedicated to news and reviews of comic book media on the big and small screen. This is episode number 66. I'm your host, Brian Professor Pettis, and with me, as always, is my illustrious co-host, Titanium, Tony Estrella, Titanium.
Hey, Professor.
We're here.
Yeah.
It's somewhat of the Devil's episode 66. we got two to three numbers of the beast.
Yes.
But we're here, episode 66.
We're in the belly of the beast.
Yeah.
The belly of the beast.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Hope you had a good Easter weekend at all family in town for Easter. It was nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Easter holiday, you got some family in, you cooked some nice steak.
Yeah, all the kids were in from school, cook a good tenderloin. I see Charles went to prom, huh?
Well.
He looked very dapper.
Yeah, yeah, end of an era, you know, senior prom.
His son went to senior prom, yeah.
Yeah, so
last one.
Yeah, you know, he's like, Dad, I only get one of them. I'm like, yeah, well, your sister got none of them, so enjoy the one you got, right?
Yeah,
so, and Michael didn't get one either, right?
No.
So we were,
pandemic kind of threw a screwball into theirs.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, I'm glad to see things are a little bit back to normal. So we'll kind of see how that. Hey, I actually heard today, it has absolutely nothing to do with comic book media. I heard today that looks like the mask mandate's being lifted on public transportation. Like all the airlines are going to start, like the federal judge cut that down. So
what are people going to fight about on the plane?
Exactly.
How are they going to kick
people off
the plane?
I've got all this anxiety, you know, that, okay.
They're going to come up with something to kick other people. He sneezed, and then they're going to kick
other people. Oh, my gosh, yes. Yeah, we'll figure that out.
They'll figure something out.
I know.
But, yeah, that's awesome. We got a good show today.
We got a lot to talk about today.
Yeah, give me a little recap of what we're going to do today.
Well, we obviously have Moon Knight Episode 3. We'll run through that.
Yes,
we got
sir.
A lot of good news that hit the wire this week that we got to talk about. And then, as predicted by the professor, the Thor Love and Thunder trailer finally came out today. The teaser did. And so we're going to do our topic of the week this week. We'll talk through what we saw in the teaser trailer for Thor Love and Thunder, and more importantly, what we didn't see in the teaser trailer, which
I like that, yeah,
which I think is telling. But we'll talk through that this week, so we got a lot to get through. So before we get started, let's talk about the patron. So the Patreon is a way that you can support the show directly. So if you'd like to say, hey, you know, these guys, these two neighborhood dads that talk about comic book media, review some shows, I enjoy listening to them every week, you know, they give me some entertainment, I want to support them. Well, you can sign up to be a supporter of the show directly. Patreon.com/supertalk is how you sign up. It's only a dollar. Every time you come out with an episode, you get charged a dollar.
Come on, people. I'm dying to give some swag away. Just sign the fuck up so I can give you a hat and a shirt and all kinds of goodies.
We are doing, for anybody that signs up between now and the end of the month, right? Well, let's just do this. Between now and the premiere of Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Yes.
We are not only going to send you a thank you note and a sticker, but Titanium's going to put some kind of swag in the package as well. Listen to me. The cost of shipping that to you is more than the dollar you're donating to the show. So what we're trying to tell you is we just like the fact that you're signing up to become a direct supporter of the show. We want to support you as well. And again, everything you give to us, we give back to the listeners. So patreon.com/supertalk is how you become a patron. We appreciate if you do that.
Thank you, patron.
Okay, let's get into the review section. So Moon Knight Episode 3 dropped this past week. I tell you what. This was my favorite episode so far for lots of different reasons, and we'll get into it. But Titanium is taking a quick break to check to make sure that we're recording the video, which we are, right? Okay, thumbs up for Titanium.
Yeah, we're good.
Did I hit the record button on the video? That might have been a problem for YouTubers.
I had a little panic attack just for a second there. All good.
That's okay. It's okay. You made it back.
I'm a seasoned veteran. I'm doing this automatically now. I don't even think about it.
Well, you lost 25 pounds, so the trip between here and the camera was quick. I mean, it was like lightning fast.
It's a fucking struggle.
It was like flash fast. Yeah, you didn't have to, like, suck your belly
I'm
in
moving like a cat
state.
Yeah,
yeah,
I'm moving
exactly.
I got cat like
you're good
and You know, I'm spry like a young buck.
But. Yeah. But so the episode came out. This has been my favorite episode so far. We'll talk about why.
Nice.
But I'm more excited about what it leads into than I am about what we saw.
Hey, when you watch these episodes, do you go back and watch, like, did you watch episode 2 and then 3?
No.
You don't do the double?
I usually watch them twice in a day. So I'll
I know
watch
you do it
them.
In the morning.
Yeah.
Right?
I wake up early and watch it before I actually get out of bed, like on my phone or something. Like I'm lying in bed, like kind of waking up at like 6:30 in the morning, and I'm like, oh, Moon Knight's out. Let me watch it real quick. And before I actually crawl out of bed, you know, and actually jump in the shower or whatever, I'll watch the episode just to kind of get it out of my system. And then at that night, I'll watch it again with the family, which I did this week as well. So I do watch each episode twice. And so I don't get the preview, but I, you know, I've seen the other one twice already, so I kind of know what happened before. But this episode was good for so many reasons. I think it dove into the relationship between Mark and Layla and what they thought their relationship was, or what Layla thought their relationship was. Obviously, Mark was hiding a lot from her, which we found out this week. But the relationship between Mark and Khonshu, the relationship between Khonshu and the other Egyptian gods.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just really just diving deep into kind of where everything is and the kind of the nature of the show right now, what they're all fighting against. And
Superfan Greg Vier even made a comment. Happy birthday, Greg Vier, by the way. Shout out to Greg Vier, one of our super fans. Actually, our guest here on Super Talk at some point in time, way back when. But he said, man, it was at breakpoint speed. It went so quick.
It was a fast episode.
It was fast, and there was a lot to
adjust. But it was
over
50-something minutes, so it wasn't, like, short.
No, it wasn't short.
But
it was just a lot.
It was really a fast-paced episode, I think. Yeah, what he's saying. Yeah,
he said it was a lot.
It was. And we're getting to that point in the show where we're now catching up to a lot of the scenes that we've seen in the trailers, right?
Mm-hmm.
There have been several that we didn't see in episode 1 and 2 that are now through episode 3. But there's not many things that we've seen in the trailers that we still have yet to see. So that leads me to believe there's a lot of cool stuff coming that we have no idea what it's going to be.
We've never seen it before, right?
Right. Yeah. And we talked about this before the series debuted. A lot of media types, not Super Talk for some reason. I don't know why, but a lot of the media types
haters
out there
gonna hate. Haters
right,
gonna hate.
Got access to the first 4 episodes of Moon Knight as kind of a pre-screener. You know, hey, we want you to be able to screen the show. And thankfully, none of them, and this would kind of break their deal with Marvel, which is the reason why they didn't do it. None of them went out and said what happens or kind of gave any indications of what's going to be
they
in any episode.
They posted no spoilers, which was great.
Right. It's fantastic. But at least they got to see him. Now, but what I did see was every single one of them said episode 4 was their favorite.
Oh.
Like, they were like, oh my God. And all of them said,
what happens in episode 4?
They're saying there's a lot of oh my gosh moments in episode 4. And even the director came out and said his favorite episode was episode 4.
Wow.
Ethan Hawke came out and said his favorite episode was episode 4. And he said, Ethan Hawke came out and said, oh, we got to do the thing. Yeah, we got to do the thing. And nobody knows what the thing is yet, but it's really cool. And I'm like, okay, now I can't wait to know what the thing is.
Yeah.
So I do believe what we've seen through episode 3 has been a lot of setup. And you and I talked about this a couple episodes ago, Titanium, is that this is a character, Moon Knight, that a large majority of the audience knew nothing about.
Yeah.
He had never been seen on a screen anywhere before. Unless you read the comics or unless you were a fan of this character prior to this series coming out, you knew nothing about him.
Yeah, right.
My wife, my son, my mother-in-law. Who's Moon Knight? What is he? What's this all about?
I literally just copy and paste the link to our video where we give a background, Moon Knight's origin, and you do a great job of explaining who he is in the comics and how he relates to the MCU. So I send that to a lot of people that ask me because they're watching it and they love it, but they have so so many questions about who he is, what his background was. So I just sent him that link because it kind of explains it all. We kind of explain it all.
Right. Well, this is the beauty of, I think, the beauty, one of the beauties of Marvel Studios and what they do with these characters is they have a broad foundation of a character from the comic books. They choose to draw from that foundation and use what they feel is appropriate for the story they're trying to tell, but they'll deviate when they need to. And we talked about this in that particular episode, Titanium, where we previewed this series, that Moon Knight had kind of a dual history in the comic books, where he had the history of Mark Spector leading multiple identities that he chose to lead to kind of hide who he really was in real life. And then later on in the comic books, they kind of retconned it, or retroactive continuity, if you remember retcon.
Okay.
They basically made it so that those alter egos that he used to have were actually alternate personalities, and they gave him DID and all the other, you know, he's struggling with DID and he's got a mental disorder.
Yeah.
So that was much later on in the comic books, but they're using that 100% now. And what I'm seeing on the screen is so wonderful, just from a fan of a character's perspective. And again,
so you like the fact that they deviated the Stephen Grant character away from the billionaire to the shy little gift shop orderly.
I think it's two things. It's a brilliant explanation behind his dissociative identity disorder that he has,
mm-hmm.
and it's like he struggles with maintaining a regular life, knowing that he has these other identities in his body that he's continuing to, and Mark mentioned that in this particular episode. He said, "I thought I had it under control until recently."
Yeah.
So this is recently. Something he's been struggling with for years and managing for years without Layla's knowledge. But I think it's beautiful. It's a beautiful story and a way to explain these identities and how they affect his life. But I also think it's a wonderful acting job on behalf of Oscar Isaac.
Oh,
the way that he
Emmy worthy acting job
portrays each of these different personalities. And oh, by the way, I think we now all believe there's a third personality that neither Steven nor Mark are aware of that is now in the mix that I think the Jake Lockley character or personality, which is his most other prominent personality, will be rearing its ugly head at some point in time here very shortly.
Well, I think you brought it up. I think the scene where they're fighting the guys in Egypt, and then he kind of has this blackout, and then he wakes up in a cab, and it's Stephen Grant. It's like, "What are you doing? Where am I going?" And Mark's like, "Where are we going? Stephen, what'd you do?" And he said, "I'm taking you to the airport." And he goes, "No." And then he sees one of the guys and he chases him down, and then he blacks out again, and he's ended up,
and
brutal.
One of the guys had been
stabbed. Another guy dead.
And Steven's talking to Mark and says, "What did you do?"
He goes, "I didn't do this."
He said, I didn't do this.
Yeah, I think that's the third personality, Jake Lockley. And
I think Jake was the one that was in the cab, because he was the one speaking Arabic to the cab driver. And he's like, "Oh, you're speaking Arabic now?"
I think Jake is the one at the end credit scene, or the end scene in episode 2 when he's drinking. And the room is smashed up. I think Jake Lockley's a wild card. I think he's an animal. And I think Mark Spector is at least somewhat, like, because he didn't hit the kid, the young boy, the young Egyptian they were trying to get information out of. He kind of slapped him to, like, stun him and get him out of the way. But I think Jake is the one that Khonshu is like, "That's my animal."
Do you think Khonshu knows who Jake is?
I think Khonshu knows it all. I think that's why he picked Mark, because he has this fractured mind, and he's playing off of those two characters, those two guys. So,
well, let's do a quick rundown of the episode. So we begin the episode, obviously, at the end of episode 2, Mark's now in Egypt. So we know that he had either been transported there by Khonshu or made his way there somehow. And he's in Giza, where the Great Pyramids are. We know he's trying to track down Arthur Harrow and the whole group that's trying to find Ahmet's tomb, who now has the scarab, so they're able to locate it. We do see scenes of Arthur Harrow with the scarab locating Ahmet's tomb and being very happy about that. And his lackeys tell him, "Oh, Mark Spector's in Egypt, and he's tracking you down." And he says, "Oh, okay, well, we're going to have to deal with that, right?
Yeah. Well, basically, he blows it off because he's like, but we found her tomb.
Right.
You know, he's so ecstatic that they found the tomb. He doesn't give a shit.
So Mark's doing everything he can to track down the tomb. He's roughing people up. He finds a few, as Titanium mentioned, some lackeys of the Church of Amun or whoever Arthur Harrow is running. You know, tracks them down, chases them through the city. He's roughing up, has a big fight on top of a building.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that really, he just showed his skills as a mercenary, right? And was able to, and he wasn't in his costume. And again, well, I don't know if you've noticed this. Rarely, we have not seen Moon Knight in costume during the day.
Right.
He only comes out at nighttime. Yeah. So I don't know if that's a limitation of the way that the gifts that Khonshu gives him only work at night when the moon is out. Right. That we don't know that, but we think that that's the way
it is.
Yeah,
we think that that's right, yeah.
But he's struggling. He has no idea what he's doing. And Khonshu's like, you know, maybe we need to get help. And Mark's like, oh, have you ever asked the other gods? Why aren't they being involved? They should know about this. And he's like, well, be careful what you ask for. And he calls a meeting of the other gods.
Yeah, he's like him. And I see this great relationship now between Khonshu and Mark Spector. I think, you know, there's like, well, do you have any ideas? He goes, I only have a bad one. And then he kind of disappears. And we all know that's happening in his mind, right? He can only see him in his mind. But we see Khonshu during the day, which is kind of cool, talking to him. And then you're right. Then he calls upon a meeting with the available gods and their avatars.
Well, there's some thoughts out there about, so we know that from what Stephen told us, there are 9 gods in the Egyptian pantheon, which is called the Ennead. But when Khonshu calls a meeting of the gods, Mark's like, how does this work? He goes, well, usually a doorway just opens up somewhere, and a doorway opens up literally like right next to him, and he walks in. And he's in the Pyramid of Giza. So he's in the Great Pyramid of Giza.
And through a reflection, Stephen kind of freaks out. He's like, what?
Oh, my God, we're in the Great Pyramid of Giza.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic. But there's only 5 other gods there.
Yeah.
So 4 are missing, and we don't know where they are and why they're not there, but 5 of the other gods are there, or their avatars are. So these are the individuals on Earth that they've chosen as their avatars, and one of the avatars walks up, and it's the goddess
Hortha.
Horath.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, Khonshu hasn't mentioned me. We're really good friends.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I haven't heard anything. And Mark's like, no, well, what are you talking about? But they have a meeting, and Khonshu is now, so it seems like the gods are able to speak through their avatars, and they're having this council, and Mark basically is talking, but then, you know, Khonshu is speaking through Mark and saying, you guys are idiots.
Yeah.
The gist of it is, you're all blind, you're idiots, this guy's a menace. He is out for all of us. He's going to unleash Amun on the world, and you guys are blind to it.
They summon, what's his name?
Yeah, Arthur Harrow. They said, well, let's hear from Amun's avatar.
Yes.
And they bring Arthur Harrow in. Mm-hmm. And Arthur Harrow, the way that he defeats the council is he basically claims that this, you know, and I think the council's aware that Arthur used to be Khonshu's avatar. But he says, look, this. You know, this god treated me badly and took advantage of me.
That's why you banished him. Yeah.
Why you banished him.
Yeah.
And this avatar who he has now is damaged. He's got mental problems. And they're like, well, let's speak to the avatar. And they talk to Mark. And Mark, is there a problem? And he's like, yes.
I have issues.
I have problems.
Yeah.
I do have mental issues.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, Khonshu, you're crazy. We're done with you.
Yeah.
End of story. So Arthur Harrow is able to kind of get out of this because by claiming that the avatar that Khonshu's chosen is flawed, which is true.
Well, and you get the feeling that these other gods, these Egyptian gods, don't really like Khonshu.
No.
He's kind of a rogue.
He's already been banned.
He's already been banished.
Banished.
And I guess it's called the override or it's a pocket dimension where these Egyptian gods are.
Well, they all went there, but they wouldn't let him come there with him.
Yeah,
so he's basically on his own.
Yeah. he's banished. I thought it was within that pocket dimension that they banished him, and he's able to communicate through avatars and whatnot. But I thought that was very interesting. So we're learning a lot about these other gods, and that there was really, I think, only four there, Isis and two guys, and then the goddess of music and love, who actually helped actually helped Mark Spector and gave him a little insight.
She's like, look, if you're looking for Ahmet's tomb, there's a sarcophagus that has the map to the tomb on it, and you need to find that.
Yeah, there was somebody who was supposed to.
How the hell? And when she's like, it was sold in the black market. We don't know who has it, but it's sold. He's like, how the hell am I going to find this?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Layla shows up.
Yeah.
And literally, it's like, it's the answer to all his problems, because she knows how to locate it, who to talk to, and she's Egyptian. And it's like, you know, she's just like, what are you doing here? You're not Egyptian. You're completely out of your element.
He's like trying to ascertain information from street vendors, although he does have a Chicago Chicago Bears hat on, a ball cap on, that kind of throwback to
he's like
Chi-town.
Ordering a drink from a street. I need to find the sarcophagus of whatever, and he's like, what? And Layla shows up, thankfully, and helps him out. She's like, I'm on it. I figured it out. I have an idea who's got it.
Yeah.
And so he's thankful that, in some ways, he's thankful she's there, because he has no idea what to do after that. So she has a plan. She's like, we're going to go find this sarcophagus. And she takes him on a boat. And that's where we have the conversation between him and her, where he's basically trying to explain to her, like, I've got some mental problems. I've got multiple personalities, yeah, but not coming out and saying that. And I still don't think she fully understands the deal he made with Khonshu, and that's the secret that he's keeping from her. And Khonshu tells
she doesn't know that she's next in line to become the avatar and do his bidding, and he wants to spare her from that. That's why he's trying to appease Khonshu with his actions.
And he's like,
his servitude.
Khonshu tells him, you know, you should tell her what's going on. He's like, no, I'm not going to involve her in this, right? And we see the conflict there. But the boat ends up coming to this big party at some place off the Nile, it looks like, some big mansion. And we see this big horse ring, and there's a bunch of horses.
Did you notice that when they were walking up to that horse ring, they mentioned Madripoor?
Madripoor, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a great...
Well, the assistant came up to her, to Layla, and says, oh, gosh, I haven't seen you since Madripoor. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, there we go.
There's tie-in to the call
back to
the Falcon and Winter Soldier, right?
Exactly.
Through the black market. You know, the power broker had all that black market high-end art, supposedly, that she was selling. I still don't think she's the power broker, but whatever.
Well, we basically get an introduction into Anton. So Anton is a real character from the comic books. He's a thief who deals in exotic antiquities. He's known as a character in the comic books called Midnight Man. And whether he becomes Midnight Man in this television series or not, we don't know. This is the actor who passed away tragically in a ski accident earlier this year after the show had been filmed.
Yeah, they dedicated the show to him at the end.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Tragic.
Right, but we meet him, and he's like, oh, yeah, they both recognize, and him and his assistant know Layla very well, had dealt with her in the past.
And apparently that the horse track or the horse arena that they were in is an ancient game that the Egyptians used to play with spears, and that was part of the heritage of the Egyptian culture that the director brought into the show, which I thought was very cool.
Yeah, very cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, they talk, and you know, like, you know, and they introduce Mark as another person, but as her husband, which is kind of interesting. But
I like how they're kind of showing Egypt as a modern city. Like, it's always ruins, and it's always like the desert and ruins, but you get to see the city this time.
Yeah,
and that there is wealth there, and that there are nice houses, and there's, you know, hotels and mansions and stuff. I think that's cool, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and then ultimately they're like, we just want to look at the sarcophagus. We just want to look at it, and they they go in there, and the conversation between Mark and Steven, Mark doesn't want to give Steven control of the body, but he knows he needs Steven's help. And so Steven is like in the reflection. They're in this tiny little glass pyramid where the sarcophagus is being kept. And Mark's looking at it. He has no idea what he's looking at.
Yeah.
And he's like, Steven's like, oh, you need to take this and fold it over this way and makes a map. And Steven's like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah, which is awesome that because he's so knowledgeable, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's his role in this. He's an Egyptologist. He is incredible wealth about, you know, Egyptian history and the gods and everything else.
I think Mark's starting to see some value in Steven, right?
Reluctantly,
yeah,
right?
Reluctantly, yeah.
Right. He doesn't want to give up control though, right? So But then all of a sudden Arthur Harrow shows up and's like, oh, you don't know who you're dealing with here. And gives Anton a little taste of the power that he's been gifted by Ammit,
yeah.
Right? And shows him the staff that Ammit gave him and chants a few verses and blows the sarcophagus up.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh crap, what just happened? Yeah. And then all of a sudden Mark's like, screw this. Moon Knight's turn.
Yeah.
And we see now Moon Knight show up.
Well, I think Arthur Harrell kind of screws with Layla a little bit by explaining, you know, who do you think killed your father at that dig? You know, he's kind of digging on her, trying to get in her head, which I thought was interesting because Mark is just like, what the fuck is he doing? He's trying to rat me out, or I don't think she knows exactly what happens to her father on that dig that you kind of saw in episode 2 where the police were showing and accusing Mark of killing these, these diggers, you know, from the archaeology dig. So I thought that was interesting that he kind of calls her out, and I think that's in her head now. And they have a little conversation later. But, yeah, one of my favorite scenes of the whole show is when he comes out as Moon Knight, and he's standing up on that pyramid with the moon as a backdrop.
And he jumps down, and the cape comes out in the shape of a moon.
Yeah,
and he's
like
just
a half moon, yeah.
Wrecking house.
Awesome.
And we do see a really good display of kind of his abilities as Moon Knight. I wouldn't say he's invulnerable, but he's definitely got a very advanced healing factor. So they were shooting him with guns, and he could like put his cape around Layla to protect her, and the gunshots would go into him, but they wouldn't hurt. I mean, they wouldn't like damage him.
They went into his cape, and then he flipped around, his cape spun, and then the bullets went flying at the people that shot him, which was super cool. Yeah, he's definitely, and I think Khonshu said, you know, you wouldn't be much without my healing armor.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and one of the best scenes was when he's fighting these guys in the horse ring, and Steven all of a sudden like comes into Mark's head and says, this is wrong, Mark. This is wrong.
Yeah.
This is wrong. So because he's wrecking house, basically. He's like killing guys.
Yeah.
And Steven all of a sudden takes over control of the body as Mr. Knight.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, guys, just take a break, you know, right?
Everybody, F the calm
chill
down.
The F out.
Chill the F out.
And then they stab him, like, with these multiple spears that they had from the horses. And Steven's like, take control of the body. Take control of the body. And then we see Moon Knight come back and basically take back control and finish all the rest of them off. But that was a great scene.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just
and Layla kind of kicked ass.
Oh, yeah.
She took off her necklace, and they were like, she used it as a weapon and killed the guy's assistant.
Yeah. That
now,
was
he threw one of his moon weapons, wound sickles, at the guy riding the horse.
Anton.
Did it kill him, or maybe not? We don't know.
I think that was either one of two things. It was either a very convenient way to get him off the show because he had passed away.
Yeah.
Or there's new scenes with him later on that he had survived. We just don't know about it.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
it's one of the two. Great. We'll find out, I think. But anyway, that obviously was a disaster, but they are able to.
Great fight scene.
Yes. Great. They're able to recover some of the pieces of the loincloth that was on the sarcophagus that had the map on it. And even though Arthur Harrow had blown it up, the loincloth itself was in pieces, and they grabbed all the pieces and they basically escaped. And then they're in the desert and they're like, what the hell do we do with these?
Yeah.
And they're looking over these little pieces. They're trying to piece them together to, and he's like, I have no idea. And Layla's like,
Mark could help. I mean, Steven can help.
Right. She's like, we need Steven. He's like, okay. Yeah. You know, basically like, all right, you know, Steven, you're up. And, you know, he basically gives Steven control of the body. And Steven takes all the pieces of the cloth and creates a star map in the shape of a star. And he's like, you know, the Egyptians were the first cartographers. They're the first ones to map the stars and use the stars as a way to navigate the world. Because in the desert, you can't see anything without this, but you can always see the stars. So he's explaining all that to us. And then we find out that the loincloth and put it in the right way was the constellations. And they're like, whoa, we can use this constellation as a map to the tomb.
Right.
And this is like perfect. But then he's like, but the stars kind of drift over time, yeah, right? It's like they're not in the same place now as they were 2,000 years ago. Yeah. And so even if we're able to use this to locate it, we're going to be a few miles away from where it really is. And then Khonshu comes in and says, I remember that night 2,000 years ago. I remember exactly what that sky looked like that night. He says, I remember every night.
Which is interesting.
But that's his kind of gift and curse as the god of the moon, yes, is that he's remembers every night that's ever been.
Yeah.
And Steven turns into Mr. Knight and says, I can reset the sky, but I need your help.
Do what I do.
Right. And so we see that Khonshu has no power on the world other than the power that he has through
his avatars,
Mark or Steven or whatever.
Yeah.
And Steven then mimics the movements of Khonshu and is able to basically move the night sky back 2,000 years. And you see it's a beautiful representation. Everybody in Egypt's like, what the hell's going on? They can see the
spectacular
sky spinning.
He didn't move back time 2,000 years. He just moved the sky, what the sky would look like 2,000 years. I think a lot of people were asking me, well, does that mean he reset the whole MCU? Does that mean Infinity Stones and everything? No, he just shifted the
stars back 2,000 years, basically circumnavigated 2,000 years of the time shift.
He used the night sky as a giant projector to flash back what the sky looked
like. And the special effects were fantastic.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was
high
great
quality, like big blockbuster quality.
But then Layla is able to use the map that Steven had created and her iPad to kind of
locate the tomb.
And they're like, oh my God, it worked. And Khonshu says to Steven, tell Mark
to come save me.
That when you're finished, that you have to come rescue me. He knows because the gods had warned him, because what he did to get the gods' attention and get the first meeting was created a lunar eclipse.
Yeah.
And the gods had warned him that if you ever mess with the sky again, you're going to be banished.
Yeah.
And so he knew that by doing this, that the gods were going to come after him.
Imprison him. Yeah.
Right. And so basically we saw a scene of the other five gods in the Pyramid of Giza.
Combining their powers.
Chanting and holding hands. And they basically imprisoned Khonshu in a statue that was in the Pyramid of Giza. So he is now gone.
Yeah.
But Layla was able to find the map and find the tomb, and that's where the episode
ends. So the Moon Knight powers are gone with Khonshu, supposedly.
Maybe. Yeah. We don't know. But Steven collapses, you know, and he's, you know, she's unable to revive him at the end of the episode. So we don't know what happens from there, but that's the way the episode ended.
It's telling that he said, you know, have Mark come save me. He uses Mark's name. And earlier in the episode, Khonshu says, you know, you're worth saving. So I think, I thought Khonshu was a D-bag and that he's a bad guy. But maybe there is some, you know, he's like an anti-hero. You know, maybe there is some redeeming qualities about Khonshu. I think his relationship with Mark is fascinating, and that whole relationship is crazy as his avatar. But I thought that was really cool. And he says, Mark, come save me. So that I'm looking forward to seeing what happens.
Oh, man.
And then Arthur Harrell comes in to the temple and has a little talk with Khonshu and basically confesses that he liked doing the bad deeds that Khonshu
had.
He
said, you made who I am.
He forged me.
Right. The things you made me do as your avatar, I enjoyed.
Yeah.
And they're why I am who I am today. And he says, I'm going to enjoy doing what I'm going to do next. And basically, ultimately said, screw you. I've got a better deal now than I had with you.
Yeah. Well, that's crazy. What a great episode.
Yeah. And I can't wait for the next one. I think the next one's going to be off the charts good. I mean, the series is really taking a very pleasant turn. And every single person I've talked to I saw your son this weekend. I saw a bunch. They're like, oh my God, Moon Knight is so good. Yeah. They're like, it's just so good. I'm like, yeah. I mean, and this is the power of the, I'll say the breadth of characters that Marvel has the ability to pull from, is you can pull this kind of B or C list character off the comic book shelves and make a really compelling series with them.
Well, let's give credit where credit is due. You pull a B-list character off, you put a really good story together,
and a great actor.
And then you pulled a great actor into that. And that's really, that is the ingredient to making a perfect meal right here, is that actor and his ability to bring this character to the forefront.
You mentioned it earlier. I mean, this is like Emmy-worthy performance. And unfortunately, the superhero genre just doesn't get the credit where it's due sometimes in I'll say the trades and in the academies and all those other things, but Oscar Isaac is killing it.
Oh, he's awesome.
He's doing such a good job.
He's fun
character.
To watch. And that's what everybody says. It's like, I don't know much about Moon Knight, but man, he's a great actor. The way he portrays two personalities is awesome.
Well, I'm telling you, a lot of my family who knew nothing about this character, knew it was a Marvel series, were like, oh, I know Oscar Isaac. He's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, I'll watch this.
Sure.
Of course. Yeah, it's a great actor. Why not? So I'm looking forward to episode 4. I think we're going to get some big revelations this next episode for a lot of things that are going to be happening in the series. And I think it's going to be a kind of a transit, because now we only got 3 left.
Yeah.
So stuff has got to happen.
4 is supposed to be off the charts, right? 4 is supposed to be unbelievable, spectacular. 5 and 6 are supposed to be very dark. And I hope 6 doesn't leave us in the dark, like figuratively. I noticed at the end of all these shows, the end credit scenes, when they're going through all those pictures, they highlight what happened in the episode, and also the moon in each of those end credit scenes seems to getting fuller and fuller.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that the last one, there's a full moon, which would be badass.
Because that's the height of the powers that Khonshu has.
Yeah, at the full moon. Yeah, right. And it's getting fuller and fuller each episode. And each show, when you look up at the moon, it's getting fuller. I wonder if, you know, in the comics, Kang went back in time. Kang the Conqueror, who was in Loki, went back in time and was Tut, right?
Rama Tut
for quite some time.
Well,
and
so,
ruled.
Yeah, so
are we going to get him in this, you think?
I think that there may be an explainer in this series of why we only saw 5 of the avatars instead of all 9.
Could he be the one that kind of put that rift between man and God in Egypt?
Well, that's what he did in the comics. He basically was so powerful that he kept people from believing in the Egyptian gods they had continued to worship,
and
they started worshiping him. And so their belief in the gods waned so much because of his power that he became the most powerful deity, and the gods were kind of like secondary to that. And they were like, well, screw these guys. And gods in general are only as powerful as the people that worship them. And I think that's what happened. So whether there's a tie-in to Loki and Kang the Conqueror and what we're going to see in Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Or Bast, the Black Panther god, right?
Bast. Yeah.
Bast.
We
get a tie-in there, maybe?
I know, potentially. I mean, who knows where they're going with this? But, I mean, that's the beauty of these Disney Plus series, is that they could definitely tie into not only other series we've seen, but other movies that are coming out.
Yeah.
You know, that would be
awesome.
That's
exciting.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So
a lot of speculation.
Yes.
We'll get into it.
Yes. But Mephisto's at fault. If anybody wants to know, that's where we're going.
I didn't say that. Professor said it.
All right. Well, let's jump in the news section. We got a couple of big things that happened this week. So I think the biggest announcement from this past week is, for those of you that don't know, Warner Brothers was owned by AT&T. And AT&T decided to put the Warner Brothers. So this was all part of the AOL Time Warner merger with AT&T years ago. AT&T ended up owning Warner Brothers as part of that acquisition that they made of AOL Time Warner. They decided to split Warner Brothers off as an individual property and said it was for sale, or it was open for negotiation. And what happened this past week was that the Warner Brothers division was combined with Discovery Channel. So Discovery Channel and Warner Brothers have now merged to become Warner Brothers Discovery. And that officially happened this past week, which was a huge announcement.
Yeah.
So those two brands, Discovery and Warner Brothers, are now combined into a single company. The CEO, who has been put in charge of this new company, came out and made some very public statements about the future of Warner Brothers and specifically the DCEU.
DC Comics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, DC Comics and the DC Entertainment Universe, which is all the movies and television shows. Yep. and cartoons and everything else that they do. And he was very, very vocal about what he felt needed to be done. And
which is exciting as shit. Which I was
scary and exciting at the same time.
I agree. They're looking for a Kevin Feige type to make some cohesion in all of their.
It's funny they called him specifically out in the announcement.
Of course,
We're looking for a Kevin Feige to type of person to run this company. Now, what they're looking for is a visionary, somebody who knows both producing, directing, creating movies and television properties, but is also an enormous comic book fan.
Yeah.
So they're looking for some, and that's the strength of Kevin Feige, is that his vision is rooted in a deep history, knowledge, and appreciation of the books themselves.
Yeah.
So the literature is really what is the basis and the foundation of why Kevin Feige loves his stuff so much. When he first started working with Bryan Singer on the original X-Men movies, it was because he was a huge comic book nerd. And he's like, oh, dude, I'm going to go work on these projects. And so when he ended up taking over Marvel Studios, for those of us who are fans, we're like, oh, my God, we got the biggest comic book geek running the comic book media.
Yeah.
You know, studio. This is fantastic. So they're looking for somebody in that vein to run the DCEU, the entertainment universe, and be in charge of all their movies, all their television shows, all of their animated series properties, as well as driving and directing some of the stuff that's going on in the comic books. I think that'll be left alone to some extent. But I think it's a brilliant move. He's just like, we need somebody.
There's not a big pool of that. Those people. He made it very clear.
I know two people.
I don't want a director, just somebody that can direct. I want, you know, like you said, you want the best of all three worlds. You want somebody that's a great storyteller. You want somebody with that comic book knowledge, a total nerd geek for the superhero genre and the books themselves. And then you want somebody that really understands producing movies and that whole process.
So they're looking for somebody to take over and basically lead. And this has been our criticism of
Sony,
DC, well, and
as
Sony,
well as Sony,
is that they don't have this person.
Yeah.
We hoped that was Geoff Johns, but Geoff Johns proved that wasn't him.
I think he's only one aspect, or
he
maybe
he knows the
two.
Comics.
He knows the comics.
He doesn't,
he knows,
and
the
that was his problem.
He doesn't know the other
the
aspects
TV and the
of
movie
it.
Side of yes. the entertainment side. He doesn't know it.
Agree.
So, but that the we've seen that disconnection. When I look at the DCEU right now, we have it's so fractured, and that's why the Marvel Cinematic Universe is so beautiful, is because it's all interwoven and interconnected. All the TV shows, all the movies are all interconnected and intertwined, and we know where we're going with all this. DC's never done that. So we have what we'll call the Justice League universe, which was the Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Superman, Batman kind of universe of movies and individual projects, as well as kind of overarching stuff, the whole Justice League stuff that happened in the Suicide Squad and all that. It was all in the same universe. Then we have these independent projects like the Joker, like the Batman, right, that were run by these independent people who made independent films that were fantastic, but they're not interconnected at all.
No.
And they're not telling a story.
No.
Maybe a limited story, but not an interwoven story. And then you have animated series that are kind of on their own. Then you have television series that are kind of on their own. Then you have the comic books. So looking for somebody to kind of own this entire vision.
Yeah.
I've got three names of people that I think can do it.
Okay. Hit me.
All right. First one, which is probably in the fans' minds a good pick. In the studio's minds, they're questioning, and I don't know if it'll ever happen. So the first one is Zack Snyder.
Okay.
I don't know if they'll ever, because he had a vision, and he, the way that he tells the story is, I was never able to really fulfill the vision that I wanted to paint. And we all know what happened with the Justice League movie. He started the movie. He was forced to leave the project because of death in the family. Joss Whedon came in and finished that movie. It was a flop in the theaters. He then redid the movie in his vision, and which was better. And yeah. We'll say broadly more accepted. But then he had plans of future movies after that and the vision that he had. But he was never, he felt like he was never given the opportunity to finish it. So the question is, do they want to give him that opportunity? So that's number one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, could he do it? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
He's done some good, I mean, Man of Steel was a fantastic movie.
Yeah, we agree.
And so anyway.
Who's your number two?
James Gunn. Because what he's done with the Suicide Squad and the Peacemaker show, he's proven not only does he have a knowledge and an appreciation of the characters and the stories and how and why they're important, but he knows how to take them and make some. He's taken C-list characters and made them relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if you give him the A-list characters, what he could do with them. Look what he's done with Guardians. Look what he's done with Peacemaker. He's made brilliant stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he, whether he does it or not is a different story, because obviously he's still got Guardians 3 to kind of do for Marvel. But he would be a guy that you could basically hand over the reins of the DCEU to, and he would, I think he would be awesome at it if he's the visionary.
Okay.
The third person.
I know who you're going to say.
You do?
Yeah.
Kevin Smith.
Okay. He was on my mind too, but I thought you were going to say Matt Reeves.
No, I wasn't going to say Matt. I was going to say Kevin Smith.
Okay.
So Kevin Smith obviously has an extraordinary, extensive history with comic books.
Yeah.
And the huge love of knowledge. Comic books and the, yeah. the knowledge
wrote
of
several.
The he's been a director. He's been a producer. He's been a writer. He's been in the business for a long time, and I think he's of the age. I think, you know, 15 years ago, he was a little bit, you know, juvenile in the way that he made movies. But I think right now, he's the kind of guy that might, if he did it the right way, could do well with it. But you're thinking Matt Reeves is another person.
No, I again, for me, I think
Matt Reeves.
Yeah. I don't think you pick. I think those guys are brilliant. Out of those three people that you said, I think maybe James Gunn would probably be the best, the fit for those. But these guys are really super creative. And even Kevin Smith, he smokes still a lot of dope. He's a big smoker. I think this would be too big for him. I don't think he could handle it. I don't think he could handle the boardroom. And I don't think he could handle not being in the chair directing. I think it would be too big for him. And you're talking about two other really super creative guys that are great storytellers with tremendous knowledge, but I don't think they have the corporate side of it kind of handled. So I would love to see out of all of those, I think Zack Snyder was given those reins, and then it was kind of slowly jerked from him by Warner Brothers unceremoniously and I think wrongfully. I think he was their guy, and moving forward, he should have the first shot of it. I think James Gunn would be a huge get for them. I don't think he would want that type. It's a big undertaking. But I'd love to see him in it. I don't think Kevin Smith, I think it's too big for him, but we'll see. I think there's a lot of things in play, but you're right. They're looking for that person with those three buckets and really good at those three buckets. The corporate side of it, the production, the movie building aspect of it, the comic book bucket where the knowledge of the comics and the stories and the rich, and then that creative storytelling to tie it all together and make it make sense, that visionary.
There's lots of options out there. I mean, there's been people that have been well involved with all of this in the past. I mean, another name, you know, you could think of, what about a guy like Bryan Singer? Bryan Singer was the one that brought the X-Men into the movie universe. And he's a guy that basically wrote, produced, you know, directed, you know, and brought the X-Men to the big screen in the first place. He could be a guy that, and he's, you know, of the age, and he's in his 50s now. He could probably do that kind of job. Yeah. I mean, they definitely need somebody, and that's the biggest challenge they have. But the one thing of that announcement that I think I was most encouraged by was they said, we have A-list characters who are on the shelf right now.
Yeah.
Specifically Superman.
Yes.
We've put Superman on the shelf, and there's no reason why we should have. And why? And you and I have said this a million times on this show, Titanium. Yeah. Henry Cavill is a superstar.
Yes.
He is a superstar. He played that character perfectly. Mm-hmm. And if they put somebody else in that role, I don't know how or why they would. Why they haven't signed him to a contract extension, why they haven't made plans for Man of Steel 2, why they don't have plans to integrate him into new projects going forward is beyond me.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
He's gone on and done, you know, two seasons of The Witcher after Justice League, and which have been
hugely successful.
Amazingly successful. Yeah. And he's so good at it. I'm like, why is this guy not somebody's just. You got to put that guy back on.
Let's walk before we run here. Let's at least acknowledge the fact that they have someone that understands the problem and is bringing it to the forefront. So hopefully they can fix it. That's awesome.
They got to find the person, though. That's for sure.
I agree.
I think the announcement was very encouraging. Now, again, from what we understand, the projects that are on the slate right now, we mentioned this a few episodes ago, DC had announced some major schedule changes to the release schedule of their movies, which if you go back a few episodes, you can hear about. I think those are all still on the slate. They're all still in production and they're being made.
Yep.
The one big question mark of all of those, I think right now, is the Flash movie, which has now been pushed to the middle of next year. So this is a ways away. And I've always said this, and you and I have talked about this, Titanium, that is a massive reset button for them.
Yeah,
if they want to take Flashpoint as a kind of a process of Flash going back in time and messing with things and then coming back and resetting the universe, you can integrate all these universes. You can change the universes. You can re-explain things. You can recast characters. It's a way for them to hit a reset button. And they maybe think maybe the reason why they pushed that out so far was, you know what? This might be our opportunity.
Yeah.
And maybe they knew this announcement was coming. And they said, we're going to push that out because we might need it to redo things.
I hope so. That would be great. I like your thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I think what and James Wong, James Wong, is that the director of the Aquaman movies? Something Wong.
Yeah.
He's done a fantastic job.
Nothing's Wong, but yes, you're right.
He's done a fantastic job. I have no doubts that the Aquaman movie will be really good on its own. It'll be very independent. It'll
He's
be great.
Very creative. That's going to be a spectacular movie. Yeah.
It'll be great. The Shazam movie, Fear of the Gods, it'll come out later this year.
Not excited about it.
Not excited. But, you know what? It's a standalone property, and I think it's a family entertainment kind of thing. I don't think you have to worry about where that integrates with anything, right?
Right.
There's no new Wonder Woman project announced. The Flash movie was going to feature a couple of Batmen, but that's, again, way out in the future. So I think they have time to figure this out. And hopefully somebody can come in and say, look, guys, Marvel wrote the script. Just follow the script.
Yeah.
It's so easy.
Oh, yeah.
Get people invested.
It's so easy, but you got to have the cooperation of the writers, the comic book people, and the studio.
I think the one thing that I'm pretty certain about, I think what Matt Reeves is doing with the Batman universe is going to be left alone. They're going to treat it very similar to what they're doing with Deadpool in the MCU. I think they're going to say, look, we're not going to mess with this.
Yeah.
He did such a great job, and he's got plans. He's going to release a couple of new series on HBO Max to kind of explain the backstory of what's going on in Gotham. And then he's got future plans for new Batman movie. Let's just let him do his thing with Batman.
Great.
And whether they integrate that into the Justice League in the future, it would be great if they did, but let Matt Reeves' vision kind of leave that alone. I hope they do.
Me too.
Because he did such a great job. And speaking of, that's one of our news items. If you're not aware of this, Batman, The Batman, is now streaming on HBO Max as of today. So if you did not see it in the theaters for some reason, living under the rock that you are, you can now stream that on HBO Max today. So the Batman is now available for streaming. So go watch it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Everybody I know that watched it, even the non-comic book fans, were like, oh my gosh, that movie was great.
Yeah,
I know Titanium's going to rewind the scene of the Batmobile like five times just to listen to the hum that it makes when it fires up the engine.
Absolutely, yeah. The banshee scream of the Batmobile. Sick. It's so good.
All right, well, one other thing we want to talk about is the rumors around the cameos for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness are kind of off the charts.
Yeah.
And, you know, take them with a grain of salt because we have to, but what people are talking about, what we might see in this movie around cameos, we know, or we reasonably expect, Patrick Stewart will be cameoing as Professor X or some version of Professor X in the movie as part of the Illuminati. But there are so many new rumors about who's going to cameo in this movie now that we haven't seen or that are keeping secret from us. It's like off the chart. Like people are just throwing names out of like all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
White Vision.
Chris Evans coming back as Captain Hydra. I mean, I've heard it all.
Tom Cruise as Iron Man.
Supreme Iron Man. All kinds of Black Bolt.
Black Bolt. Oh, the original Black Bolt from the TV series. It was on ABC. We've got John Krasinski as Mr. Fantastic. I mean, the rumors are
Monica Rambeau as Photon.
Right. Peggy Carter as Captain Britain. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Haley Atwell coming in as Captain. I mean, so the rumors about the cameos are off the charts.
But they did say this is going to be bigger than Endgame with cameos. So I think that's
I'm all
huge.
For yeah, it, dude. Too. I'm like, give it
and
all
the fact
me.
That nothing's leaked about it is spectacular.
Give it all to me.
I love it.
I'm ready for it. And we did hear that the budget for this movie was pretty big.
Yeah.
I mean, like $500 million. Like they like getting close to like Infinity War budget type. So the money that they spent on this movie is pretty enormous.
Yeah.
So hey, bring it all to me. Like I said, we're all excited. All we're all in. Titanium's bought our tickets. We're going.
Yep.
Blade is going to start filming in Atlanta and New Orleans this summer.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We that is confirmed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Finally.
Yeah.
I'd love to see a Moon Knight tie-in somehow and set that up. I don't know, man. And I tell you, I'm a little concerned about a couple of things. One is I heard that the Hawkeye series isn't going to have a second series. It's a limited series, so maybe just one of Hawkeye, which I'm not that upset about, but Haley Seinfeld, I really want her in more products. I mean, more production stuff.
There's no way she's not going to be in something else.
I hope. I mean, please tell me that.
There's
again.
No way, Titania.
Okay. That's upsetting that she would not. The Black Knight, I think they just dropped the ball there. He's got to be brought back. So there's a couple of characters for me personally that I really like and I want more of and I really want to see more of. The Black Knight, the new Hawkeye, those type of characters I want to see again and I really hope they bring them back. But just to get that announcement of Blade is going to start filming this summer, it's going to be just absolutely awesome.
And again, rumors abound, but we have a feeling or we've heard that there's a Werewolf by Night Halloween special coming in October. And there's massive rumors that that will be the first time we see Mahershala Ali as Blade in that limited series or that special that comes out in October. Look, if the rumors are true, look, put them all in there. Put Ghost Rider in there. Put Moon Knight in there. Put them all
Introduce
in there.
Him, yeah.
Oh, man.
Put them all in
are
there.
Are you kidding? I mean,
that'd be great.
Awesome.
I just hope they don't leave Moon Knight without some kind of twist.
Follow on.
Or cameo.
Something.
That leads into something we're going to see in the future.
If they end this series, the Moon Knight series we're watching right now, with no either end credit scene or some kind of teaser as to where we might see him again,
yeah.
I'll be disappointed.
Yeah.
I have a feeling they will, though.
Yeah.
You don't. hire an actor like Oscar Isaac and put him in such a compelling role and create this beautiful character without any plans to use him going forward. I just have a feeling that they got plans, and we just don't know what they are, which is, we've talked about this. I think I'm hopeful Comic-Con this year is going to be one of those oh my God moments. We're finally going to get all the answers, because we don't know anything about the rest of the schedule for Disney Plus. We don't know anything about these unannounced projects. We don't know what they're doing. And I have a feeling Marvel is going to use Comic-Con this year as a platform to announce a lot of things that they haven't had the ability to announce for a while. So, and there's been a lot of reasons why they can't, for delays.
You
and
think
things
Comic-Con
like,
or D23?
I think Comic-Con this year is going to be big.
Oh.
I mean, if you remember Comic-Con 2019, which was the last time we really had a Comic-Con, that's when they brought Jane Foster on the stage to announce Thor and Love and Thunder. They, I mean, they did a lot of things at that Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And we just haven't had that in a couple of years. And
that'd be great.
I have a feeling that we're going to get that this year. Another thing I read, so Andrew Lincoln from Walking Dead fame, is in talks with Marvel for a new role.
Wow.
Big get for them. Big star. As we know, the Walking Dead series is kind of coming to an end. They're kind of finishing that off. You know, I think his time there is ending. And he's looking for new work. And Marvel got in touch with him and said, hey, we might have a job for you.
Wow.
And so now the rumors abound of, well, what kind of role could he be?
Who could he step into?
You know, I think we can make some
speculation
about what it might be. I don't think they're casting him as like a Wolverine type of character.
He's a little too old.
Mr. Fantastic? Maybe.
Maybe, huh?
He would be a big get and would play that role probably pretty good.
Yeah.
How about a Magneto?
Ooh. Wow.
That would be a good get for them, too. So, I mean, who knows? But the fact that he's in talks with them around a role, you kind of got to think about what kind of projects they have coming down the road and where he might fit in. But
he's a great actor.
I mean, a superstar, you know, was led that series for years. So, I mean, that great
That's
actor.
Good news.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's jump right into our topic of the week this week. Today, we got a pleasant surprise. So we talked about last week on Super Talk that we felt Thor Love and Thunder trailer was around the corner. Hopefully that week it didn't come. And then Titanium and I are going back and forth during the week. We're like, well, we didn't get it. What's going on? I said, well, I heard it's coming the 18th. And it dropped today. Thank God we finally got a teaser trailer. After the record was set for the longest amount of time we've had to wait for a teaser trailer before the premiere of a movie.
Not even a full trailer. It was just
a teaser.
Yeah.
Longest amount of time we've ever had to wait for anything for a Marvel project. Finally, they dropped a teaser trailer for Thor Love and Thunder today. It was about a minute and a half, so it's not like it was short. It was a teaser, but it was, it was pretty lengthy.
Guns N' Roses.
Oh, Sweet Child of Mine was the background music of the teaser trailer. If you haven't watched it, go check it out. It's really, really cool.
Yeah.
What I'll tell you is, what wasn't in the teaser trailer says more about than what was in the teaser trailer.
Agree. I think it sets up Guardians very well.
We see them in the teaser trailer prominently. Peter.
Who don't you see?
Gore the God Butcher.
You don't see him.
We know he's in the movie.
Yeah.
And we don't see him at all.
No.
In costume, or anything.
And we don't see Gamora.
Nope, she wasn't in it either.
No. So I think that sets up Guardians very well.
Well, we know at the end of Endgame, when Thor went off with the Guardians, Gamora wasn't with them for obvious reasons.
But she wasn't snapped away.
Right, but maybe they're now going to go off and try to find her or whatever. Yeah, so that, we know that for sure.
You did see Peter Quill trying to search for her, and then Thor kind of was like, what are you looking at? Yeah. I think that's telling. But you're right, we don't see Gore the God Butcher. But we do see another Pantheon, is that how you say it? Pantheon of gods?
Right. We do get introduced to a new pantheon of gods, the Greek gods. Yeah. So let's just talk about a few things that were in the trailer. We see Thor as a young child, then as a teenager, then as his adult self kind of running. And he's like, I'm not sure who I am. I need to kind of find myself and really figure out who I am. Yeah. And he said, my hero days are over. I just need to kind of really like figure out what kind of person I want to be. And so yeah. They're kind of underlying this with like he's going through this kind of interpersonal struggle of kind of figuring out what kind of person he wants to be. And we do get some scenes of him working out. So there's a great scene of him as Fat Thor grabbing these two massive chain link chains and just like slapping them up and down, like working out.
Doing battle as ropes. Fat Thor. It's called battle ropes. Yeah. Yeah.
As Fat Thor. And then eventually at one point in time in the trailer, he rips off his cloak and shows that he's all in shape. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, of course he's in shape.
He's wearing a hat when he's doing the battle ropes or the battle chains. This says Strongest Avengers. It's a trucker hat that says Strongest Avenger, which is hilarious.
It's awesome.
Yeah, there's some great scenes in that.
But he's with the Guardians early on. We can see in the movie. It looks like they end up taking him to Sakaar because it looks like he's back on the planet of Sakaar at some point in time. And they drop him off there, and he says goodbye to them, and they take off. We kind of see that in the trailer. So we anticipate they're in the early part of the movie, but maybe not the later parts. But I tell you, one of the coolest things I saw in the trailer was the boat with the horse-drawn boat that they had.
The goats
that were like pulling the Viking boat.
Yeah.
And he has Stormbreaker on the front of the boat that's got the Bifrost in front of it, so it's able to like traverse space in this boat. And we're like, oh my god, that looked cool as crap.
Did you see in there when that boat was kind of floating in the, it's kind of like flying through the air and the goats are in front of it like flying the boat, there is a neon sign on the boat that says Cocktail and Dreams.
Oh.
From that Tom Cruise movie.
Yes.
It's the
same. Cocktail.
From Cocktail, the Tom Cruise movie. It's the same neon sign.
And who was the chick that flew down and like onto the boat and he grabbed her and he kissed her? Did that look like Katy Perry?
It kind of, well, he looks like somebody with blue hair or green hair, and there's some kind of Kraken tentacles wrapped around a boat in the background. I don't know if that's a dream sequence.
Who knows?
Or what that is, but that was wacky.
But it looks like he flies off at some point in time to Olympus.
Yes, Olympus.
Which is somewhere out in space somewhere.
Somewhere.
And we see scenes of Zeus. We see like,
which is played by Russell Crowe.
Right, lightning bolts flying through the air and you know, Zeus grabs one of them and we get introduced to Zeus, you know, so we get the Greek pantheon at some point in time.
Huge.
We see him with Korg a lot. They're talking a lot. There's a scene drawn directly out of the comic books of him standing on a rock overlooking this huge, enormous white beast that's got spikes coming out. That's really pulled directly from the comics.
Yeah, right.
When he's trying to investigate somebody who's killing these.
He's a god, right? That beast is Thor's friend. He's a god. He's not like a beast. He's not a monster.
No, he's a
god.
He's a deity, yes. And he's wondering who's killing these things.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the invest. But that's literally, that scene is pulled directly from the comics. Yeah. It's amazing. But yeah, that's, it looks real, and again, it's just a teaser. We didn't see gore. We didn't see, you said Gamora, but I don't expect to see her until Guardians 3. But we didn't see anything of Gore the God Butcher. Uh-huh. We got nothing about the plot around, you know, him killing all other gods and all kinds of other things. And it's really more about Thor trying to find himself and identify who he wants to be and what he is and all these other things. But then the end of the trailer, we see Mjolnir flying through the air,
pieced together.
It's got cracks all over it, and we see Jane Foster basically hold it, and she's like ripped to shreds in some costume.
Yeah.
And he looks at her, he's like, "Whoa,
the mighty Thor!" Yeah. We see her in action, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, very good tease. And I thought
Do you think they'll follow the comics where she had cancer and then she needs the hammer to survive?
Yeah, I mean, the comic books, the whole Mighty Thor kind of run where she
becomes Thor.
So Thor gave up Mjolnir during the whole Gore the God Butcher run in the comics. He felt he was, after the whole Gore the God Butcher thing happened, he felt he was not worthy of the hammer anymore, and he basically left it. And that's when Jane Foster got cancer, and she felt like Mjolnir was calling to her, and she kept hearing Mjolnir like talking to her, and it came to her one day, and while she's in the hospital recovering from chemotherapy, and she grabs it, and it basically healed her and made her strong, and she's like, oh my gosh, when I have the hammer, I'm
whoever wields this hammer shall have the power of Thor,
right? And so I do believe they're going to use that whole awesome. and maybe they give the backstory of, you know, when the Aether had been part of her,
infused with her, yeah,
right, that it caused cancer. Massive damage to her body and gave her cancer, and maybe that's the storyline.
I can't wait to find out. Yeah. That's so, but it's so psychedelic. I mean, Gavin Klingham texted me immediately and was like, "Oh, it's just what we wanted. We wanted the Taika Waititi. How do you say his name?
You got it. Nailed it.
No, I did not.
You nailed it.
How do you say it?
You nailed it.
You got his how wacky it is and kind of psychedelic, and you got these weird kind of scenes that kind of will wrap together in the movie. It's just what we wanted. I think they nailed it. I think he nailed this trailer. It's perfect. It's a perfect tease. I think the music, again, he gets it. You incorporate the right music to create an emotion, and people will latch onto this and start to favor it, right?
Well, again, the two biggest rumors around why it took so long for this trailer to come out, the two rumors were, we're behind schedule, we're struggling to finish things, the special effects aren't done, we can't get the movie out, and therefore we don't have a trailer, which is part of it. The other rumor is there are some major plot twists in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness that are going to lead into Thor Love and Thunder.
Yeah.
That if they showed certain scenes in the trailer, it would give away the plot of what happens in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which I want, after seeing this and what they didn't show in the trailer, I 100% believe that's exactly why it was limited to what we saw.
Got it.
Because there's certain things that if we had seen certain characters or certain things in the trailer, we would have
figured out Doctor Strange.
Something would have been spoiled in Doctor Strange.
Okay.
And I think, I have a feeling that we might get either a second trailer or a new trailer for Thor Love and Thunder
after Doctor Strange opens.
Or at the premiere of Doctor Strange.
Interesting.
Whether we see it then or like you said, like a week after Doctor Strange comes out, there's a new trailer that, now that you know what happened in Doctor Strange, now we're going to give you some more details. So the fact that we didn't see gore at all, that we didn't see, and maybe the reason why Gore is going on his mission is because of what happens in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Maybe something happens there that leads this.
Maybe it happened during the snap. Maybe, who knows?
We don't know.
Yeah.
But I do believe that there are some things in Doctor Strange that they can't give away in this trailer that they're holding back from us that we may get later. So I this is all it was.
It was a teaser. Very, teased.
Very big tease.
Yeah.
And it was enough to kind of make me happy that, God, this movie. And they did announce in the trailer, July 2022.
It's not delayed.
Not being delayed. They're not pushing it back. So it is coming out.
Let's go.
So I'm excited for it. Yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was exactly what all I needed. That's all you had to do, Taika. Just give me that. I'm happy with it, right?
Excellent. All right, great show, Professor. Let's. The bell has rung. School's over.
All right, well, that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week for more Super Talk. To get in touch with us on social media, hit us up via email, supertalkpodcast@outlook.com or Twitter @supertalkpod. Thank you very much. Until then, stay super, everyone. We'll be right back.